another episode of Behind the Vinyl, Behind the Vinyl with Darren and Nicholas.
I had the joy, Nick, when you were probably in bed with your wife last night. I'm texting.
What? No, I don't want to hear anything more now.
Well, at that same time, I'm texting you. That's what my nights are about. Texting you, like. So, something's gone wrong. I've taken a wrong step somewhere along the line.
Hard knock life.
Yeah. So, thanks for giving us your time, man, and welcome to Behind the Vinyl.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and it's a good week. It's actually the week of your release of your solo record.
Exactly. It's a release of and it's called Save Your Soul. The thing is, I've found out again that I've got tremendous lovely fans, tremendously lovely followers, because they've been given feedback and good feedback, very good feedback and excellent feedback. So I'm a happy, lucky guy.
Yeah,
it's a great sounding album. Really
Thank
is.
You so much, Nick. Thank you so much. I'm proud, and it's like I'm so excited for people to hear. Let's see where this takes us. I'm so excited.
Yeah, the song "Save Your Soul" is just so good. It's so soulful. Just it's beautiful, man.
But it's also very simple. That's why you like it, because you can play it yourself. It's so simple. You can play it.
Even I can play. It's literally what I was doing when I was texting you last night. And I'm just like, fuck, I love this song. It's just, it reminds me of, it's got that kind of 70s vibe to it, you know?
Yeah.
And the guitar work. And I just like, I was fucking loving it.
I'm falling into the 70s trap. I'm definitely, it's done for me. I'm going to stay in the 70s for the rest of my career.
Nice.
Like, yeah. It's always suede jackets with tassels, and it's and denim. It's I don't know. I'm going nowhere now.
Move. I also like Move a Mountain as well.
Oh, sweet! Thank you. I'm so happy, and it's going to be very exciting to see where that song is going. Also,
yeah. But we digress a little bit. Behind the Vinyl, we kind of threw it over to you, and you chose Highway to Hell.
Yeah.
As your album. So we're going to dig a little bit of that. So I don't know, Nick and I were talking a little bit. We're not overly surprised that you're an AC/DC fan. You know, we can kind of feel that. You've always been?
Yeah, always been. I mean, I was maybe a little too late coming in, because I had to go through all my punk things before I could go back to the Bastard Blues of AC/DC, because I remember the first time I heard AC/DC, that was Shook Me All Night Long. That was a single that I bought when I was a tourist in England, right when it came out, and was like, hey man, this is just Slade or Sweet for the new generation. So I thought I was past it. I thought, oh, I've been there, kind of thing. But lo and behold, because Bon Scott is Bon Scott, suddenly there was much more to it, I must say. So when I heard Highway to Hell, it was like, and I think it's very true, actually, when I say it's the album that I have heard the most. I was spending 2 or 3 years in my late teens listening to that album very loud on headphones.
Yeah!
And there is a connection between you and Highway to Hell.
There is, definitely. Okay, come on, Nick, tell us. If you know, then you say.
Well, the recording engineer for Highway to Hell was Mark Dearnley, and he was your producer for your second album.
So that's the answer to why did Mark Dearnley produce the second D.A.D. album? Because Jesper was such a big fan of Highway to Hell, yes.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. And he was not as expensive as Mud Lane. But we pumped him for all kinds of. Also, it was a little bit too nasty to keep interviewing him about what went on with the sessions in Highway to Hell. But he kept saying they were nice blokes and they drank a lot of tea and they smoked a lot of tea. That's what AC/DC does.
What was it about him then? What was it about? Was it mean? And was it hard getting him to produce your album?
It was. There was things that fitted very well. He was not busy, but also he was in the middle of getting divorced from his wife. So he said, "Wow, 3 weeks in Copenhagen with nothing but blondes. Yes, I'm coming." So, but I mean, it was the clash, a culture clash, because of course he couldn't really respect our punk roots, and we were not as good players of the blues as AC/DC was. So he had he did lose some hair in that session. But, I mean, we had a good time. He was very, very sweet. And he was typical English gentleman. So he was it was a pleasure working with him. And, I mean, back in those days, in the middle of the 80s, late 80s, it was like, I mean, 3 weeks, that was what you had. So it just on to the next, and then back home again. So, but it was like our second album, and the second albums are always a bit tricky because it's half what you used to be and half what you're going to be.
Right. Yeah. True.
That sophomore release, it's always the case, you know?
Exactly.
So what did you probe him a little bit about the Highway to Hell?
Yeah, we of course we talked a lot about it, and it turned out that they are really, really good players, AC/DC. So they did that album very quick as well. Of course, Mutt Lange has a lot of methods that takes time, but at that point they were meeting at a good time because Mutt Lange wasn't really becoming Mutt Lange yet. He was not like into that whole Def Leppard, let's make hi-hats in Scotland and let's make a bass drum in Australia. kind of production. so it was, we heard a lot about that, but they mainly, what we got out of him was they were really, really good players. They didn't really do this as they just, everybody in the same room, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it swings.
I think we've talked to Mike Fraser, who's been an engineer and worked with AC/DC for a lot of the late releases like Rocker Bust and Black Eyes and so on. And I think I remember him saying also that AC/DC is looked upon as being like this really basic rock and roll, easy to play. But he also said that it isn't really easy to play. It's kind of hard to get that sound and get that feeling.
Exactly. Really, I mean, and I saw a lot of interviews with Malcolm, and he says, of course, that there's a lot of rock bands out there, but there's not a lot of rock and roll bands. And we are a rock and roll band because it swings. So AC/DC, especially, I must say, admit with Brian Johnson, you can really hear the blues. You can really hear the whole music history in AC/DC with Brian Johnson because he's like an old black lady. He swings. He really swings. He's got soul, but he's not as good as writing lyrics as Bon Scott. And it's Bon Scott has a lot more. I don't know. He's more barbed wire. Where Brian Johnson is, of course, just perfect in many ways. But Bon Scott is the real, real, real deal. Definitely.
Yeah, that's something that I think is often underrated. The lyrical content of the Bon era. You know, it's really, really tongue in cheek. It's really, you know, tells the story. It's great.
It's clever and it's easy and it's sometimes, I mean, I don't know, to be quite honest, the best AC/DC number in the world, the best AC/DC song in the world is Down Payment Blues for instance. And that's where he's much more, that's for my, what yep. this guy thinks. And that's, and it's very, I don't know, it's so tongue-in-cheek, humorous, but blues and honest at the same time. It's just a perfect song. But as an album, I think Highway to Hell is the best of them all.
Something I said earlier, like Nick and I were talking, and it's probably my, to me, it's a faultless record, apart from maybe one track.
Yeah. So, okay, which one is that? Love Hungry Man?
Exactly. Yeah. Love Hungry Man, which I think Angus has come out and said that's ACDC, that's the worst song they've ever done.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's very important for me to know, to tell everybody that... whatever, I mean, you really, really, really try to concentrate. You try to make a big piece of art when you do an album.
Yep.
But the better the good songs are, the worse the mediocre songs becomes. So suddenly, I mean, most of the AC/DC albums after, maybe not Back in Black, but after that, there's only, you know, 3 or 4 songs that are really good. Yep. You have to be honest. So that for on Highway to Hell, that's only one song that's not good. That's a miracle. That's yeah. a piece of art.
Absolutely. And it was also put up against like Love Hungry Man. It followed with the final track, Night Prowler, which is such a great song.
Really, and
one of those underappreciated songs as well.
Yeah. But that's because that's where Bon Scott, he could make some, I could say, some comic lyrics, or he could make it into a comic book sometimes, which, that for instance, Nightcrawler is like a very good, like, Marvel. It's good fantasy. But with Brian Johnson, and especially the Angus Young lyrics later, there's no pictures, no nothing in it, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Also, with Night Prowler, that was a song that later on with the serial killer Ramirez, where exactly. he kept like quoting that song,
yeah.
And he also said that he believed that AC/DC stood for Antichrist Devil's Child, which is a really 80s thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well. Yeah, exactly. Do you remember the whole Judas Priest thing? I mean, maybe AC/DC was lucky that they weren't dragged into some of that.
Yeah.
And it's so double standard kind of thing. And yes, Ramirez was probably Antichrist, drug child or whatever, but demon child. But AC/DC was just AC/DC. Yeah.
True. But it's so typical of the US as well.
Yeah.
There's always that easy way of blaming, like when you had the Columbine shooting, it was Marilyn Manson and all that stuff. They always take the easy way out, blaming music and movies.
Yeah, exactly. It's so funny. It's the whole, there was a whole Tipper Gore era there where everything was, oh, please. really paid attention to the fact that when Axl Rose joined AC/DC after Brian Johnson lost his hearing, he said that his way, his gateway drug to AC/DC was Touched Too Much on Highway to Hell. And that was my gateway drug as well. Mm-hmm. So, and later when you listen to the album, it's not the best song. So what's wrong with us since we need a Touch Too Much pop song to be guided into AC/DC's universe? What's wrong with me that I fell for Touch Too Much first? Was it because of Robert Mudd Lang's backing vocals, or was it because it was such a well-crafted, potent pop song? What happened with me back then?
Only you can explain what happened to you back then, mate. I got to be honest with you. But
and this was my way of just putting myself all over this behind the vinyl show, because I asked a question and I'll take an hour to answer.
Well, see, that is one of my top four AC/DC songs, and I think the combination of Touch Too Much and Walk Like You, I think, is perfect.
Absolutely perfect.
And I think add Rock and Roll Damnation and add Let There Be Rock, and between those, it kind of shows the whole scope of what AC/DC can do. You know, from certain extremes to other extremes. It's like Move a Mountain. You know, it's completely different to Save Your Soul. You know, it shows the versatility, and that's what this did to AC/DC. I think they're great songs, and you talk about Mutt Lang. And I tell you, another genius move from Mutt Lang is always playing on these fucking records, man. Yeah. Like he's on these records. He's getting a royalty from playing on that. He's getting a royalty from playing on Back in Black. You know, 42 million records from all the Def Leppard. So he's smart.
Yeah, but he's co-writing the songs. And then he writes the lyrics to go up all the way up there. And then when Joe Elliott goes in, you cannot reach it. Don't worry, I'll take it. And then he goes in, squaw!
He plays a little bit of percussion on a lot of these records. Def Leppard, he's in the back there playing a bit of percussion. So,
smart guy.
But it is funny, as you mentioned, that Mutt Lang, I mean, he wasn't the producer when he produced Highway to Hell. He had produced like City Boy, The Motors, which I always thought was a pretty crappy band, and Boomtown Rats. They were like the major bands he'd produced by then. So he wasn't a hotshot. That also makes you wonder why they picked him.
Exactly. And that's a good question, because the Brothers Young are not very communicative. It's not like... No. Darren could not put up a couple of days of interviews with those guys. They wouldn't do it. So if they did it, they wouldn't say a thing. So we don't really know exactly what happened, but I must say that to move forward, I mean, they did it together. Really, I mean, it's so well crafted, but it's, you know, it's not pop. It's dry and it's... I mean, it's so cool. That album is so cool, because you can easily say, as Kurt Cobain said about Nevermind, it was their Motley Crue album. You could also say that Back in Black has a lot more glitter on top than Highway to Hell has. And of course, you get sucked into it. Ah, it sounds great. And oh, yes, all kinds of lovely details. But it takes 2 or 3 years, then you go back to the dry blues, because that's you can feel that this is actually better music, that even though the production is so stellar.
They started out with Eddie Kramer, and you also, I mean, reading about Highway to Hell, you really get the feeling that Atlantic Records, they wanted a hit song for the US, and they had put out If You Want Blood, the live album, before this. And they were kind of hoping that If You Want Blood would become like Kiss Alive, that it would take the band up a notch, but nothing really happened. And then they started out recording with Eddie Kramer, and the AC/DC guys, I think especially Malcolm and Angus, didn't like Eddie Kramer at all. And then Mutt Lang was brought in, which, as I said and you said, was kind of not a nobody, but he, you know, he hasn't really made a name for himself by then.
Exactly. But I think maybe the biggest thing was that Mutt Lang is not American. Maybe it's because Eddie Kramer was definitely American.
Yes.
And as the three of us knows, there's a lot of good people in America, and then there's all the Americans. And if you hook up with one of the Americans, you are fucked.
Missing, we're saying this is also the first record with George Young not behind the desk as well.
Okay. So they moved from home with that album.
From home. It's the first record, so they're out of Australia. They're in London with everything with Mutt Lang, and they've also got their brother, who George Young I think was the extra member of the band. You know, I'm sure. He was the older brother, and he was also a bona fide rock star in Australia. So he probably coaxed them through those first, what, five records beforehand. So this was a big step out for them.
Definitely, yeah. And they were still young, and they were totally energetic, and they really, really, I mean, they were definitely on an up. And as soon as, that's what I know, as soon as you are on an up, you're more or less on the way down, but you don't know it yet. But Back and Back was like the pinnacle, because for those about to rock, is the song is one of the 10 best songs in the world, but the album is not so good.
Right.
No. That could be the same with The Razor's Edge. Yeah. Like it's an okay record. Thunderstruck didn't really gel with me at first, but that has become one of the biggest and most popular AC/DC songs, but you know, the whole album doesn't have the quality of a Back in Black or a Highway to Hell. Definitely not.
Exactly. No. So that they were on top, they're not knowing that they already were on the way down. And nobody knows it, and that's how it is. And you hit your spot, and that's it. And I mean, I was in Stockholm at the Friends Arena, I think it was, in 2005. I can't remember. But the last time they were in Stockholm, mm-hmm. I was sitting down as if it was a Corona concert, and I was smiling as if I had a heroin drip going in here. I was the happiest in my life. So I don't care about ups and downs in rock and roll. When they play those songs, I'm the happiest man on earth.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Did you see them with Axl Rose? Because they played Copenhagen, right?
Yeah. I was asked by all kind of medias in Denmark, how did you feel about Axl joining AC/DC? And I was saying, and I shouldn't have said it, but I said it. I think it's so awkward. It's like watching mom and dad having sex. For me, at that point, it was so awkward. But I must now admit that he really did a great job. I must now admit that there was a perfect step of Angus to take. I must now admit that I should have kept my mouth shut and not be so conservative as I was.
Yeah.
No, he did great. And also, I mean, speaking of Touch Too Much, I mean, he suggested that song, and that was a song they'd never played live.
Exactly. So yeah, that's okay. Because do you guys know a Finnish band called Smack?
Smack.
Smack.
No.
Oh, you should. There's an album called Salvation, and there's a band in Finland called Smack, and they're dead and gone. And Guns N' Roses were very much influenced by Smack, and Hannah Rocks, of course, in the early things days also. And it's like suddenly I see things connecting very much with, you know, being this, because the thing about AC/DC is that it's blues but something more, and that's the something more is very much predominant on Touch Too Much. So that's where you start. That's the gateway drug. And then suddenly you get lulled and sucked into going back to the blues, the real blues again. So that whole pop element on Touch Too Much, it's brilliant. It's genius.
Yeah.
Because you keep the raw power, but you give something to the audience.
Making love.
the track Highway to Hell, which is probably one of their biggest songs, without a doubt. You know, probably that and Back in Black and maybe Hell's Bells.
Yeah.
Oh, for those about to rock. Mm. Or Thunderstruck. The list goes on. But I've heard some conflicting rumors where that song come from. You know, I heard it was something Angus Young referred to their tour beforehand. You know, this tour is just a highway to hell. I've also, it is also a road from Perth where Bon Scott grew up, which is one side of Australia. There's a road that goes across the Nullarbor Plains, basically across the whole of the country. And yeah. They also call that the highway to hell as well.
Yeah. So, and they did it in the old days as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've heard two rumors about where the actual name come from for that song. Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard that it was, as you said, it's a highway. It's called Canning Highway.
Yep.
And it goes from Fremantle, where I think Bon was born, and it goes down to, it ends up at a pub called the Raffles.
Right, okay, that could be right, yeah, yeah.
That kind of makes sense with the lyrics and all that.
Yeah.
I think that the thing about if you're Australians, if you are an Australian, then you would know that road is called Highway to Hell. So that, I think that's pretty much. But I also think that Angus secretly wanted to write those lyrics that he did later, that he's been doing for ever since, more or less. Everything Brian Johnson was pushed a little bit aside. I think that I think Angus wants to put his hand into everything because he's been the gimp pushed out on the stage. Okay, do the show. I think he wants to some intellectual power as well. So I'm pretty sure that he wants to take as much credit as he can without people really noticing it.
Could be right. Could be very right.
Because he's been all the bad lyrics, all the lyrics, kind of okay lyrics. That's Angus. I mean, he's just sitting there having fun with his with his pencil.
Well,
and cup of tea.
Yeah.
An interesting thing is that it's almost exactly a year between Highway to Hell and Back in Black.
Yeah.
Highway to Hell came out on the 27th of July, 1979. Back in Black on the 25th of July, 1980.
Yeah, it's so crazy. It's so crazy. But it shows the workmanship also, but it also shows how it was. As I mean, you were not an artist when you played rock and roll. You were just a rock and roller. And so you just had to keep on keeping on. But it was probably Bon's death that did that. They couldn't tour anymore. And okay, what can we do apart from shooting ourselves in the head? And then so that probably plays a role. But I mean, Stones did it in the 60s, album after album after album. And
Kiss were putting out two records a year.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that way of working because nobody knows what art is. Nobody knows what tomorrow wants. So you need just to press your talent and not be so picky about it. Just write some songs and on to the next one. I really like that kind of work ethic because whenever you sit down and use 8 years on Black Ice, and Black Ice comes out and it's like, oh yeah, 8 years. It's just easy, easy, man.
Yeah.
thinking back to your early years, how hard is it to come up with that second record or that third record when you've got the pressure of the record companies on your back and you've got the media on your back? And how does that take away from your creativity?
Yeah, I think that the initial push and the joy you get from the first album, if it becomes successful or mildly successful or just successful because you made an album, I mean, it's just, wow, magic. I think most of all, you take that kind of self-confidence with you, and then you run into the second album, and then halfway through, whoa, then the air runs out of you, and then suddenly it's hard work. I mean, from my point of view, from DAD's point of view, the pressure from the audience and the record company wasn't that a big factor actually. But as soon as you show, as we did halfway through, show a little lack of confidence, of course people flock. Whoa, we'll tell you what to do. So it's and that's maybe one of the big things about the Brothers Young, is that they are so hard-headed, because and no one can come in and, you know, and mess with their confidence in that sense, which is really something to look up to, but it's hard to keep going.
Yeah. Well, also on your second album of yours that Mark produced, as I understand, he was the one pushing for a cover of A Horse With No Name.
Yeah.
What was the reason behind that?
Because, I mean, he just, I've been an engineer. Now somebody asked me to be a producer. And then, let me be a producer. I'll look into it. What are the band? What do they need? I'll need to bring them forward. What can we do? And his, it was great. It was perfect to do that with the Horse and No Name. I think it's a great idea. Really a great idea. And we had fun doing it. But of course, it was a little out of character looking back. But I mean, he also wanted us to, and that was another funny, very small funny thing. We've been playing Fender Super Reverbs all through the first album and the first tour. And he was like, guys, can you please put in a real amplifier? And it was the first time we ever had a Marshall amp. And we were going like, whoa, that's all that sleazy hair metal. No, 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 we're punk rock. No, 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 we don't want to. And please, guys.
Funny.
So, you know, we have the thickest book ever written is The Mistakes of DAD.
Take a chance with me.
Okay, yeah. We should look. I would like to look at that. Yes, I was just say that. If You Want Blood, now that's my favorite song. Before that, as I'm living now, that's yep. because of that. If You Want Blood, you got it. That's it's genius. That reverb, that's perfect. For instance, yeah. But I started out with a touch too much, and then what was it? Walk All Over You was for yeah. the longest time my favorite.
Right, yeah.
Because when I first heard it, I thought that Highway to Hell was a little, how do you say it? It was a little, not cheap, you say, a little too easy, a little too banal in the guitar work. I was going like, come on, Highway to Hell, you could do better. But of course, I turned around and saw the genius in it afterwards. But initially, I was saying, that's a little too simple to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember having a hard time when I was a kid. Mm. I think I heard Highway to Hell, well, probably around 80 or 81 or something like that. And I remember having a really hard time with Beating Around the Bush.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. I don't know what it was. I like it now. I really like the riff in it, but I had a really hard time with that song.
Me too. There was a little too much. But, I mean, some good friends of ours, actually the guys from Pretty Maids, they went over and visited Brian Johnson because they have a mutual friend in the mechanic. The mechanic for Brian Johnson is a Danish guy that they know back home from Jordan. So they were over there. They went out drinking with Brian Johnson, and he said the famous words, which is sums up every lead singer in a hard rock band. Is he said, "Well, I'm just a singer in a guitar band. I just put in the shade." And that's what it is. You are underneath the riff. Fuck. So people ask me why I did a solo album. Because I've been living underneath the riff for 30 years.
talked about If You Want Blood. I'm wondering where that come from. You know, obviously they had the live record beforehand with that, which is a great title. Did they make it off the back of that title, or was that song floating around a little bit beforehand?
That's a very good question. What I think is that, first of all, If You Want Blood is definitely a touring rock band. I mean, that's definitely, you're so tired, you're so hungover, everything is so bad, and you are forced to go on that stage again.
Yep.
And that's the mindset you go in with. Okay, If You Want Blood, okay. And so I think it's a brilliant title, a brilliant song in that sense. And I've asked myself the same question, because it's not so seldom it happens that the people get an idea, use it straight away, and then suddenly found, oh, there's more to that idea. But I don't know, maybe they were just in that period of time in one big movement. So the albums were not like, oh, let's have a break afterwards. Maybe it was just one big movement. So everything was, you know, whatever came first, we use it and on to the next. But nevertheless, it's a funny thing, because it's hey, shouldn't you have done it the other way around? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
One story I've read is that I think when they played, they played Day on the Green in like 77 or something like that. And a journalist asked Bon what they could expect, and he just answered blood.
Yeah.
And that's where it came from. If you want blood, you got it.
All right.
That's perfect. It's a perfect picture of how you feel.
Yeah, it is. It is true.
And we got a couple of minutes left, so just to bring it in towards the end, there was also talk of Bon possibly being ousted from the band as well. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I've read some of that, but it wasn't really anything. I hadn't heard any, like, it was very serious. But if he was an alcoholic, then, you know, at some point the charm disappears and only the stupid animal is left. So I don't know, but I don't really know.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard he was a little bit, and this was where it kind of gets a little bit weird, that the record company was pushing for it. And, you know, and I'm sure the record company had something to do with Mutt Lang, definitely the management. They just started working with Peter Mensch. So they were kind of going through a change at them, started working with Peter Mensch, who is in turn turned out to be probably the biggest manager in the world. They were out of Australia and playing and recording in the UK. They had a different producer. And yeah, I heard there was talk of getting rid of Bon around that time because of his antics and his unpredictability. But it kind of shows how driven Malcolm and Angus were, that they were like, you know what, we're gonna make this big.
It's wild, and it's so wild to look back and see the timing of it, that they were giving everything they had for such a long period of years. I mean, it was literally like tour album. They were really, really fighting. So, and you need that. I mean, what I also say when people interview, say, okay, what does it take to make a rock star? Okay, it takes that you really need to love traveling. You really need to, and all that, and that's all those things beside the point that you really need to do. And one of those things is also, you know, to play the game at certain points. And maybe Bon Scott didn't want to play the game at some point.
Yeah.
True.
All righty. We got to wrap this up. Yes, Babinza, Save Your Soul, out now. Congratulations. Fucking great album.
Nice of you to invite me to this little chat. That's been, that's good to get those old things. Oh, memory. Yes, perfect. Lovely. And it's a very, very good album.
It's a good album.
It is.